Kate Camps here with a classic. It's Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Hi, Kate.
Morning.
This is, as you said, not quite as well known in New Zealand as it is in America, where it's like, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, exactly. This is like, you know, people who've only read one or two books because they haven't read a book since high school in the US will have read I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. And it's kind of, I mean, I feel a little bit embarrassed that I had never read it earlier. And I was talking to my mum last night who thought all of her career was a high school English teacher. And she said she used to teach it, which would have been at Wellington Girls College. And she said teenage girls absolutely loved it. And it's a great book to do at high school. And I can see why. And I guess I have a kind of slightly mixed view of the book in that I think it's a really important book. It's a really interesting book. It's certainly super gripping. But at the same time, I understand why people can be, you know, it's quite fruity and it can be a little bit preachy. And I can understand why it might be a bit of a turn off for some readers.
Well, I mean, she was writing it at a time, 1969. Yes? No. When?
69. 69. It came out in 69.
It came out in 69. Yeah. So we're talking about the civil rights. We're talking about the, you know, the plight of the African-American and the, particularly the plight of the African-American woman. So it's not possible to write this book at that time and not have an agenda. And the agenda is, I suspect, something that you're referring to, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I guess
the moral of the story.
Yeah, and I guess it's not the fact that there is a moral of the story, but maybe it's the way that it's gone about. But I also think, you know, the book is absolutely extraordinary because it's a coming-of-age story from the point of view of a black woman. And even today, there is a perspective that you almost never hear. Mm. You know, we hear so little, even in our supposedly woke times, from the perspective of a black woman. And so,
well, that's what,
you know,
Toni Morrison is.
So. Yeah, and it's just, so it still has the ability to be quite radical even now in a world where it probably shouldn't be. So I sort of feel like, you know, there's an essay by Francine Prose, the American writer, probably about 15 years ago called I Know Why the Caged Bird Cannot Read, I think it was called. And it was basically a bit of a takedown of this and of To Kill a Mockingbird and sort of saying, because we're shoving, these are the books that we're shoving down the throats of our teenage high school students, no wonder they don't read. I mean, I don't agree with her thesis, but she makes some critiques of Maya Angelou's prose that, you know, probably quite legitimate. There's some parts of her, like she, one of the things she quotes is says, you know, the man's dead words fell like bricks around the auditorium and too many settled in my belly. And she sort of takes her to task for the mixed metaphor and the sort of cliche.
Hang on a minute, that's not a mixed metaphor, is it?
Well, I guess, they're settling in the, are they bricks settling in the belly? I don't know. But
I mean, bricks, you know, you're staying with the bricks and the bricks are settling, and that's not a mixed metaphor.
I mean, it's certainly the kind of thing that, yeah, I don't think it's the greatest sentence ever written. But
no.
I think what Prose misses the point of is that that scene, the scene that she's talking about, is an absolutely stunning, incredibly powerful scene where the graduating class of Angelou's high school are waiting for someone to come and speak to their high school, and they've got their own graduating student who's speaking, who's a black boy, of course, and then the, because they're at a segregated school, and then this white guy comes in to give the address to their year, and she, it's a fantastic portrait, and at the end of it, the young Angelou is so angry, and she says, you know, then I wish that Abraham Lincoln had been assassinated before signing the Emancipation Proclamation, and Harriet Tubman had been killed by that blow to her head, and Christopher Columbus had drowned in the Santa Maria. We should all be dead. I thought I should like to see us all dead, one on top of the other, a pyramid of flesh with the white folks at the bottom as the broad base, then the Indians with their silly tomahawks and teepees and wigwams and treaties, the Negroes with their mops and recipes and cotton sacks and spirituals sticking out of their mouths. I mean, it's just an absolutely stunning, staggering image, and the anger that she finds, you know, and I mean, it's obviously such a righteous anger, but the originality and the power of the way she expresses it while still inhabiting the mind of the child who's speaking about it is just incredible. Mm. So, I mean, I think the, you know, to kind of find fault with a book that in many ways is probably written for young readers and is maybe, you know, it is sometimes glosses over things or a little bit simplistic, I think is just, you know, kind of not the point.
You were prompted to read this by a video that we've put on our webpage at your request.
Yeah.
of Meghan Markle cut to Maya Angelou reading her most famous poem, which is I Rise, which is a fantastic reading.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think about that video?
Well, I found it was so interesting when that video came out, because one of the things, of course, about Meghan Markle is that you know, it's easy to forget looking at her that she's a black woman, because she is, you know, she's quite pale, and she, you know, we see her dressed in all of the sort of conservative garb that we expect to see the royal family dressed in, or any celebrities, and that's not our vision. And then the bit that struck me in that video is when you see Meghan Markle with her mother, and you see there she is, she's a woman with, you know, her natural African-American hair, and it's just, it's quite exhilarating, because it does, I mean, it's such a powerful poem, that's why it's exhilarating, not because I'm a huge fan of Meghan Markle, but, you know, it's a great poem, and it draws, I guess, a through line between the racism of today and the racism of Maya Angelou's time. You know, she's born in 1928, and it just shows that there's that through line, that it's still absolutely there, but that the defiance that that poem is about, a kind of joyous defiance, and the performance that Angelou gives is absolutely, you know, it's just, it's stunningly joyous, and also a big F you to her, to those who might try and crush her. So, yeah, I think it's a really cool example of how one cultural product can be kind of mashed up with another cultural moment.
This is the first of seven autobiographical books that Maya Angelou wrote, and people haver about whether they should be called autobiography or autobiographical fiction, because they're clearly managed in a way and sometimes contradict each other in some ways. So, you know, is it the truth or is it the myth?
And I don't really know much about, you know, the sort of factoid side of her life and how much of this stuff is true. But there are points in the book where you think, oh, but please, surely this can't be happening now. Like, just the sheer amount of plot that happens in the book seems absolutely staggering, and it's kind of like a bit Huck Finn-esque in the way that it seems to cover, you know, vast swathes of the American landscape, because she, you know, we start and she's down in the South in Arkansas being raised by her grandmother in a segregated rural community, and then next minute she's in California, she's gone back to her parents, she's in San Francisco when World War II is declared, you know, I mean, it's a really sprawling narrative. She goes down to Mexico, you know. Yeah, small book. She goes down to Mexico with her father. He gets so drunk she has to, having never driven a car before, drive a manual car 50 miles back to the border. I was like, not sure it quite happened like that. But, you know, there is a sort of picaresque odyssey element to the book that can make it a little bit unbelievable. But I don't know. I think that's kind of not the point. I think the point of it is really just to see those experiences through her eyes in a sort of rollicking, high energy, very plot driven. I suppose it's a bit weak on characterization, which again makes it more like a young adult fiction than an adult fiction. But, you know, she just has incredible life experiences, and they're life experiences that we still are not used to hearing about, because we're not used to listening to what black women are saying.
And extraordinarily frank. I mean, she talks about the sexual abuse and the subsequent rape that she endures by her mother's boyfriend. Mm. And she says that after he abuses her, but before he rapes her, she craves his affection.
Yeah.
She wants to feel the encasement of his big arms.
Yeah. And she said before, you know, before the sexual abuse she's referring to, before the world had been Bailey, that's her brother, food, mama, the store, reading books, and Uncle Willie. Now, for the first time, it included physical contact. And it wasn't until that point that I realised actually she is quite something she doesn't comment on, but she really does have a not very affectionate upbringing with her grandmother. Her grandmother's quite a stern, distant kind of person, and that's probably one of the things that makes that sexual abuse have that effect.
You're recommending people read
this? Oh, definitely.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Very nice to talk to you. Kate Camp talking about Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.